We moved on to the final. Yeah, this is the game obviously we haven't gotten to talk about
No,
because
no.
we didn't have a, we did our podcast just before.
Yeah.
Both you and I said heart Croatia, head France, and we wanted to see a new team win.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna say this: in the first half, Croatia were unlucky to be 2-1 behind to
Yeah.
France. I believe they played better. France got ahead because Griezmann dived and got a free kick, which there was an own goal from.
Very unlucky, like
And if you're
extremely
going to
unlucky.
use the VAR to do the handball that supposedly was a handball from Perisic, which was the penalty for Griezmann, which I call that a 50-50 handball. I don't know if I would call that if I were an referee, but at the end of the day, if he was looking at it and went, "I'm not sure," and the benefit of the doubt has to go to France, I'm okay with that decision.
I'm okay with the decision because it was the referee himself. So I
Yeah.
feel like the VARs went, "Hey, look, it hit the hand. Did you see it hit the hand?" He said, "No, I didn't. I'm going to go have a look at that." He looked and he took his time on it. He was making sure he made the decision. So I felt
But
if
if
he
you're
had
going to do
seen.
a VAR to look at that, and that's fine, I think you should, the VAR referee should be telling the ref, like, "Hey, look, I think Griezmann may have dived. Do you want to look at that?"
Yeah, that's outside
And
their remit, though, unfortunately. Like, there's issues about where the VAR can come into it, and such. Like, I wasn't with the handball. I wasn't so upset because, to me,
I think.
what happened, the result that came, the penalty came out would have been what happened if he had seen it hit the Perisic hand. So it's not that big a problem. It wasn't like he'd seen something and said, like, he'd seen the bad tackle and go, no, and then gone ahead and looked and go, oh, actually. He obviously hadn't seen the handball to begin with. That's why he went and had a look. And then once he saw the handball, he thought about it and decided what. And I thought it was telling, like, people complained about him going back. Like, he looked, went, and then went back and had another look. But when he went back and had another look, he looked at it in real time. And so to me, that didn't matter. Like, I thought that was a good choice by him. He's like, actually, I've looked at it lots. Slow-mo, different angles. Let's look at it, standard picture, real time, and then I'll make my decision. And he did that and he went, no, okay, that's a penalty. And I thought that was fine. I mean, it was very hard on Croatia. And that decision, you're
Perisic.
right, it could have gone either way. Like, where was the his
And
hand
so
was
very
moving,
two
but yeah.
potential yeah two potentially unlucky goals they
Yeah.
didn't need to
Oh,
that they
the first
potentially would
goal,
not
yeah.
have conceded.
The first goal, I'm with you, that was, yeah, Griezmann went down. Like, Griezmann got touched, but he went down so easy. He knew what was happening. He was like, I've been touched. This is pretty much an okay sort of position. I'll go down. Yep, ref's given it to me. Excellent. That
And
was really harsh.
it would have been one thing if he had dived and it scored from the free kick, but it was a very unlucky own
Yeah.
goal by Mandusic.
That was also part of it. You're right. Like, that was so unfortunate. It was a lovely ball in. Like, it was a very good free kick from that position, but yeah, the fact that Mandusius was the one that got the head and tucked it into the corner of the goal, like, and then he's just like, oh. I mean, Croatia did turn around, and Dusik was one of the ones that put in the effort after that and helped to create the chance where Croatia equalized.
Yep,
So, I
and then
mean,
scored from the Hugo Lloris howler in the second
oh, yeah,
half.
in the second half,
I
yeah.
mean, I don't want our listeners to think that I think Croatia got robbed. No, I think
No.
France won the final because they played better and they deserve to win. I'm not questioning that at all. They scored two great goals from both Mbappe and Pogba. So that was a great performance by France. And to be fair, Hugo Lloris' clown goal, shall we say, or a comedy goal.
The one for the fans. The
The
one
one for the
to give
fans. Like,
one
this
to give a
is
bit.
basically Croatia's one bit of luck the whole game,
Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
much.
It was pretty much the one bit of luck. And even that wasn't really luck. That was just Lloris being Lloris for some strange unknown reason, deciding to be really wet. Yeah, you're right.
But Hugo Lloris becomes only the third goalkeeper to captain his team to a World Cup victory.
Yeah.
The others being Iker Casillas and Dino in 2010, and Dino Zoff in 1982 for Italy.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba becomes only the second Muslim to score a goal in a World Cup final
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Zinedine Zidane has done it three
Yeah.
times in two different finals.
And Mbappe, what's
Is the
only
youngest
second?
player to score in a World Cup final
Since Pele, wasn't it? Pele beats him.
since Pele. You are absolutely right. He is only the third teenager to make an appearance in a World Cup final.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was.
But that he's clearly a one for the future. Like, there's already a saying that there's going to be a new Ballon d'Or winner this year. I think there's still 6 months of football to go, so we will see. But very deservedly, young player of the tournament, and I think very deservedly, Luka Modric got player of the tournament, winning the Golden Ball.
He definitely.
Like I predicted, Thibaut Courtois getting Golden Glove and goalkeeper of the tournament.
Yeah, no, Courtois definitely deserved that. I think we both predicted that. I put the caveat on it just in case there was a stunning display of goalkeeping in the final that from Subasic or from Hugo Lloris, but both of them sort of had very average. Yeah. Well, Subasic had an average game, and Hugo Lloris, well, we know what he did.
Had a lower. Below average game, shall we say.
Below average, yeah. So yeah, Courtois definitely deserved that. And yeah, obviously Lukaku didn't score in the third, fourth match, and there was no hat-trick wonders in the final, so Harry Kane got the golden boot.
Yep. All in all, I think it was the sort of match that was good to end the World Cup on. Like, I think you and I had been pretty lucky in our early years of World Cups. We ended up with 3 goals in the 98 World Cup, and then we ended up with 2 goals in the 2002 World Cup.
Yeah.
And then it went back to form with a 1-1 in 2006 and a 1-0 in 2010 and another 1-0 in 2014. Like, that's what a final act usually is.
Yeah.
And then we went back to a 4-2 here.
4-2. I mean, this was amazing. This was definitely a different final. Like, normally finals get a bit more tense and everything. Like, semi-finals are tense and then finals are next level. But this one, Croatia was here to win, and France was here to win as well. Like, both teams came in with a winning attitude as opposed to a don't lose attitude.
And that's what I liked about both sides. Like, at the end of the day, Croatia played a clean tournament. They weren't, their players didn't dive around all the time. They didn't constantly nick and act nuggety and do little fouls when the referee didn't look at their players and stuff like that. They got to the finals by playing good football. And playing their style of football, keeping the ball slow, passing it around in their own half, and measuredly going in and getting the ball into a position and scoring a goal. And that was their game. And France also stayed true to their formula. They had speed, they had youth, and they had basically a gun of a striker in Griezmann, who just generates assists and goals like crazy.
Yeah.
And basically, even with the striker who did not even have a shot on goal all tournaments,
France managed
to score 4 goals twice this tournament.
Yeah,
that's all on the counter. Like they knew that they had a good defense and they had speed, and they weren't going to be playing a pressing style of game like Belgium or a sit there and take set pieces like England. They knew their game. They quickly passed the ball quickly, and when they were off the ball, players like Kante, Pogba, and Matuidi just defended really, really well, making sure the opposition didn't have enough space and making sure they broke up the shape of the opposition in their offense so that when they did inevitably get the ball, there would be a lot of space for the counterattack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. Like, the two finalists had their style they play, and it was good to watch styles as well. Like, the nice build-up play of Croatia, like, it was good because it wasn't boring, just tiki-taka, pass it around on your own half stuff. Like they say, they built up, they move forward as a unit, they keep possession, but they got forward into attacking positions and then created great chance and generally scored for them. And so then France, like you say, they knew what they had. They had speed, they had youth, so they used that well, and they made sure that they could exploit flanks and put the guys who had ridiculous pace into space and start getting in behind defenses and causing trouble that way. And it was awesome.
Both sides, I think, built their attacks around their best players. Like, Croatia basically went, we have players like Perisic and Modric, so we build the team around making sure they're able to control the games and become good playmakers, using playmakers in that role. And France basically went, we have people like Kante and Pogba and Matuidi who can just keep a screen and just help our defense all day and keep us from conceding too many goals. And we've got speed down the flanks and a gun of a striker. Like, basically, I'm just sitting here going, if France had a guy who could actually shoot instead of Giroud, they would have been unstoppable this tournament.
They were pretty much unstoppable anyway, but geez, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Giroud.
We've talked a lot about highlights this tournament, and like we've talked about very superficial lowlights, but I think pretty much the tournament's been great. The only downside for me was that France and Denmark game, which was basically a walk around the park, which they didn't bother to. Both sides knew they just needed a draw to go ahead, and they did. I don't like that when that happens in a World Cup. Sure, France ended up winning the World Cup, but they could have tried to go win that game and try and go for 100%.
Yeah, and maybe they'll regret that when they think about back, because then they didn't have the perfect cup. Like, they dropped points there. But it's sort of the problem with some of those third games in the group where everything's sort of done. Like the Belgium-England game was another one. Whilst there was a goal there and Belgium won it, it was
basically second 11 on second 11. England, the both sides were already through the tournament. You know, they both, they weren't denying any of the other teams by playing out a draw.
Yeah,
like in a similar situation in the 2002 World Cup, Brazil could have played out a draw with Costa Rica and kept Turkey out of reaching the second round, but they didn't.
Yeah,
they played and won against Costa Rica 5-2.
Yeah, exactly.
And ended up winning the World Cup with 100%.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, the France-Denmark game was worse, but it was just the games where the teams involved have nothing on it, or where they don't need to exert that energy as such, and they're trying to that was the England-Belgium game at the end of the group stage. Both of them put out their second 11s. Both of them we don't need injuries, don't need yellow cards.
I'm fine with both sides playing a second 11 and keeping their yellow carded players off from playing. That all makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like the 11 playing the 11 on the team, at least the game, for example, the England-Belgium game, Belgium tried to win that game, even if with their second 11.
And England tried as well. Like, I know what you mean. Like, the France-Denmark game was worse. Like, that was definitely just we'll kick the ball around and pretend we're going to do stuff when we're not really.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See, this is what I don't like about it is, when you had a similar situation in the Olympics in London, where people in badminton were effectively trying to lose games to get on the easier side of the draw, the Olympics people just kicked them out.
Yeah,
and said, "Nah, we don't care." And people were complaining, going, "No, you made the rules that incentivized us to do this," and they said, "Yeah, but we expect you to try to win. That is what that is what you agreed to do when you came to play."
Yeah,
exactly. And if you had balls, I think FIFA would have docked points of Denmark and France. Probably both sides would have still gone on to the second round, but it would have been like a warning to anyone else going play out a draw and this is what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's important for FIFA to do that because we're going to have three team groups when it expands to a 48-team tournament, which might happen as early as Qatar next time.
Oh, really?
It's
going to bring that forward because I thought it was 2026 was plans for
26. It's definitely happening, and they're telling Qatar that we might talk about expanding it to 48. And Qatar said we can listen to you, but the original agreement was 32. And they're like, yeah, that's fine, but we want to explore the option.
Explore the options. Fair enough, then.
And if you're gonna basically dividing it up into groups of three, this is gonna happen, and that's why we don't like odd number groups. One of the reasons why I think if you were going to expand the World Cup, you should have just expanded it to 64 to prevent this from happening.
But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, say they're going to have something there to stop that. I mean, they did it originally by having all the last games played at the same time so that other results couldn't impact it. But it still has this sort of thing where maybe they've got to insensitize winning a group more. So it pushes the second place teams to actually try, which makes the first place teams have to respond.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure how they do it, really. They're just going to have to. Unless because it's a known problem. Unless because they do it with the stick option and go, look, if we feel like you're blatantly not trying, then you get dock points for a draw. But then there comes, what is when they're trying and when both teams have just shut each other out.
Yeah.
I mean, the France-Denmark game was blatantly. Yeah, both teams are trying, but I'm sure the teams could get more inventive of how they should go about getting nil-all draws or one-all draws if they're that sort of stick mentality comes in. So it's what I was saying, maybe a carrot approach where it's actually beneficial to have won those games.
I mean, maybe there is a potential carrot and stick approach. So if a referee on the field thinks that a game is basically being set up to be a draw, or there's a sort, not necessarily a fix or something similar, like when Germany let Austria score a goal and basically let them win 1-0 to get them through, both teams through to the next round, where if there's something like that happening, referee can immediately stop the game and just go, nah, it's an abandoned game. You guys both get dock points. It's a it's at that point a ref's call.
That's the bit with that docking points or abandoning games or anything. You've got to have some sort of protocol or ruling or who decides it and how it's decided, because then that runs into other problems as well. So it's a bit of a minefield of getting it right. But hey, this is why FIFA officials get paid millions of dollars, right? They've got to sort this stuff out.
Exactly. It's much to think about, but overall, like, if we're going to just complain about one game in a tournament, that's definitely a really good World Cup. So rate this World Cup 11 out of 10.
Definitely, I'm going with 11 out of 10 as well. Like, it was crazy good. It was so exciting. I also liked that, like, basically the top four teams, none of them had too much diving going on, or when calls going against them, crowding around the ref and having a bit of a moan or anything like that. I mean, there's little bits because it's always a little bit, but they were generally the cleanest of the teams. Like, they played the game.
Yeah. Certain superstar, most expensive player in the world aside.
But yeah, I mean,
but even that was a bit of a highlight. I don't consider his diving to be a low light in the game. That was kind of funny. And I'll be honest, like, I agree that Neymar overdoes it sometimes with his reactions, but he genuinely gets fouled. So I don't see an issue with it at the end of the day. He rarely makes a meal of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I think we discussed this at the time of his rolling efforts. Yeah. But I mean, he was clearly fouled. Sure, their reaction to it was way, way over the top. But hey, I suppose if you feel like the refs aren't paying attention to that, or that you're getting extra special attention from everybody because you're Neymar, you've got to do something to try and even that up. And if he's decided that rolling around the ground for, you know, 6 months after the foul is the way about of doing it, well, good for him. You know, if it's getting more attention from the refs of said fouls, and therefore he's helping to reduce the actual fouls on him, that works for it too.
I think it kind of plays against him now, because I think referees are now ignoring more fouls on him because he's a known diver.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tightrope he's got to walk if he's doing it this way, is that.
Yeah.
If everybody sort of thinks he's just falling over easily, then he's not going to get it. But if he's doing it because he feels like people are not paying attention to when he's getting blatantly fouled, like, it turns into a bit of a catch-22 for him. But he's just got to, sort it out himself, basically.
Sure.
My sort of thought pattern on it, like.
Exactly. But you're right. When you compare to, for example, Rivaldo acting like he got hit in the head when the ball touched his leg against Turkey in the 2002 World Cup, relatively benign World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was I think the worst game as such would have been the Colombia-England game, where both sides sort of got a bit too worked up about everything. Because, the Colombians sort of started it-ish, but then the English didn't really ignore it. They sort of got involved as well, especially the whole whether someone got hit in the head or not thing going on the wall or one of the free kicks in the first half, where, you know, replays showed that basically everybody was having a bit of trying to have it on. Like, there was jostling and everything, but then the Colombians were like, oh, and then the English were like, oh, and it's like there was nothing near either of those players. Like, you guys?
I think overall, hopefully we'll have another podcast before the season starts. We can discuss all the various transfer windows and people moving and speculations. And for once, we're going to have the transfer window close just before the league starts.
Yeah, so that's going to be different.
So that's going to make a huge difference to the Premier League teams. Makes a huge difference to fantasy football, but that's a whole nother podcast to talk about that as well.
I guess we can do a little bit of our self-advertising, because our fantasy football leagues are both up, both the non-draft and the draft. So they're on the blog and in the Facebook, so go join, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
See if you can knock Jutastic off his double crown.
Yeah, that might be all we have time for, so we'll... All right. See you guys next time.
See you next time.